Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Feels so cold and dark suddenly. Doesn't feel like the same space. Two new faces tonight. Have you been here before?
Never. I mean, I've been to the Wednesday night meeting, but never here.
Oh, maybe I've seen you on Wednesday night.
At least once.
And you?
This is my first time.
Welcome. Welcome to both of you. So let's do introductions around.
Ellie. Michael.
Jeffrey.
Tim.
Monica. Samuel.
Wendy.
Jeff.
Jerry.
And Angie. Well, we're in the middle of the study of training the mind in compassion. I still haven't found my book, so I'm just depending on Norman Fisher to help me out with this. This is a very old Tibetan study. This is a Zen meeting, but we take up whatever is juicy and good. This is Chogyam Trungpa's version and commentary on these old suggestions of how to develop a self that is open to others. How to develop a self that isn't the center of the universe in the way that our pride puts us. So it's lots of little, some of them quite odd suggestions that with some study are really quite helpful. And I believe we are what we're doing is taking each one home and spending a week with it and then coming back and sharing our experiences. So what we were doing, supposed to be doing this week, was about bringing things to a painful point. Is that right?
Don't bring things to a painful point.
Don't bring things. Thank you, Jeff.
I was just like, I've been doing this wrong.
The whole week. It's been 2 weeks, actually. It's terrible. So it's about how we often try to exalt ourselves, or at least feel some kind of inner stability by putting other people off balance in one way or another. It's very subtle sometimes, but it's also kind of fun. And I think we do it in a kind of jokey way, but it also can be in a kind of self-serving way. And I think that's what this is about. It says, don't act toward others in a way that makes their faults worse. Or telling others about somebody, picking out things that don't look right or aren't right, and then talking to others about it. I find that in my neighborhood, my new little neighborhood. I've never lived in a suburb except since I was a child. And people talk to each other about each other all the time, and they're all picking up new pieces of information and telling each other about it. Do you know what that man said? And do you know what she's doing now? It's very interesting. But it can devolve into something that's not very pretty and not very helpful to the neighborhood, and especially not to the mind that is depending on that kind of adverse attitude to develop towards somebody. It isn't helpful to the somebody, even if you don't talk to them directly. It becomes an atmosphere. He says it's better to trust. Instead of noting that a terrible person is terrible, and based on this, treating them as if they were terrible, it's better to treat them with tremendous kindness because we think they're terrible. He says also that we don't have to treat nice people nicely because they're nice. They won't mind. They'll just shrug it off. But terrible people can't take it nearly so well. And so it's best to just really address terrible people in a very kind way. This is counter to how we live our life usually in America. And it's a culture, though, it's a culture that could use some more of this kind of practice, I think. So, how was it for you all?
I think about a week ago, one of my coworkers said something that at first kind of brushed over my head, but as I kept turning it around, I kept getting more and more angry about it. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time just entering data into a computer or opening boxes, so there's a lot of time to let something fester if you're going to let it. But I found this helpful because I started picking it apart, like what was the problem, the real problem here, not that I was angry about it, but what was the real problem going on. And I just came to the realization that, well, my wife always tells me you shouldn't assume maliciousness where ineptness might be the problem, to say it politely. So I started thinking, well, did this person actually mean to be offensive, or were they just accidentally being offensive, or did they not realize that that would have the effect on me that it did? So it kind of started to dissolve after that. Not bringing things to a painful point is, we really do, we build it up out of whatever is there that we can find.
Yes.
And if you stop building it, it stops getting larger. It just falls right back apart.
Yeah.
So it was helpful. Still a little sore, but not not feeling a painful point jabbing me in the side of the head anymore. So that's nice.
Did you mention it to him?
I didn't mention it to her.
Her.
the other piece of advice I always got was shut up.
I see.
So I didn't say anything. It didn't really need to be spoken about any further. So
that's often very good advice. Yeah. Well, that's an excellent example.
Weeks ago we talked about shrugging it off or letting it go. How do we know that we're not running away from something and kind of burying it and saying in the name of, oh, I'm letting it go? And then 2-3 months later we grow up. We don't
know
why.
I think we never know. And if that notion comes into your mind, it's well to address it. If you think that might be the case, then look into it further, because it might be that way. It's, you know, it's not written anywhere. Every day is brand new, and just have to fumble our way through it, mistake after mistake, as they say. And sometimes we have to go on an instinct that isn't always completely correct in the view of somebody else or in your own view, depending on what happens, but you don't know. You just have to try it and see. Or not try it and see. Whatever seems best. And sometimes that's scary because we don't know and other people are involved and, you know, it could be a mistake. But we do make mistakes. We can't help it. The more you know yourself, the more the easier it is to work your way through these things. That's why self-study is so important. If you know Samuel well, you'll know whether she's running away or not.
It just seems people that are clear deal with things face to face. It's always nice to be calm and not blow up or, you know, get upset or whatever. But it's just so nice when something is just done.
Yeah.
Kind of take care of it before it's broken or... Or my husband's approach, we'll fix it when it breaks really good. Let the shelf break before we fix it. So there's that approach too. But I guess each one is different. And
You have your way. Yeah. Indeed.
judging things. She's a little on the paranoid side.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes she tells me these stories that I don't really believe of
other people.
Things that disappear from her apartment or people that she runs into. And so she had a little story today. And I just listened to it. Fortunately, I only had to listen to it two times. But there's just nothing you can say.
Do you argue with her sometimes?
Work? Do I work with her?
Contradictive?
Oh. Well, sometimes I express doubt when it's very improbable. Very improbable. But it doesn't seem to work on her. She doesn't really... She's 100% sure of whatever it is she believes.
Yes, I had a friend like that. And it's an illness. And it can get really, really difficult if it becomes, you know, everything around is bad in some way. Being terrible to me, begin calling the police and, you know, really creating havoc for life. It's difficult for that person.
But in other aspects, she's very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So I have allowed some relationship to develop, but sometimes she gets a little too strange.
I think the strangeness is as you say, you just accept it and let it be. We're all pretty strange. I think we we're all pretty hopeless that way. One way or the other, I think there's always something awry and askew and off. But there's something miraculous also in each one. Just to be here alive on the earth, just like this. And I think the more we appreciate that, the less people's weirdness matters. It's just part of the picture. Including our own.
I have preferences about weirdness.
Well, Thank you. Maybe we can talk about the next one, which starts with a very funny Tibetan image about not putting burden of the cow on an ox.
Wendy's worried about the lights.
Oh, yeah, I just can't read my handwriting.
Oh.
It's getting worse and worse. So it's Norman says it's like putting a head on top of a head. That if you've got something going on, to load it up with extras is useless, and more than useless, can be harmful. So, so this is where he's saying not to denigrate others and elaborate on others' faults. Don't make somebody's pain worse is basically what putting the cow on the ox is, adding to whatever's going on. Adding to the difficulty. We're very good at pointing out difficulties and noticing them, but it's not always helpful to make a big deal out of it. We can identify what it is without blowing it up, adding to it, as Jeff was saying, until it builds and builds. We're very good at building in our mind, and it can run away whenever something sparks it. It easily wants to run away, create a new story, or satisfy some sort of need, inner personal need, of which we have many. And our relationships with others often turns into something that is about making us feel more comfortable and better. He's pointing out that if you're hurt by others, that is your problem and your burden, but you don't put that burden on the other person. But the hurt is coming from in you, not from out there somewhere. That's really hard to get sometimes. I tell the story sometimes, one of the times when I was having trouble with one of my children. I have three sons, and as they grew up, there were all kinds of things happening, of course, and one of them was a time when I was fit to be tied with one of them and really felt very abused by him. And I encountered somebody who specialized in training people in some sort of one of those 60s, 70s mind training things where you sat in big rooms and for hours and hours and they didn't let you go to the bathroom. Forgotten what they're called even, but there were a lot of them. And I met somebody who trained in one of those, and he said to me when I was complaining about my son, said, "Well, what are you getting out of it? What are you getting out of all this despair that you're feeling?" I thought, "Me? What do you mean, me? It's him." Yeah, I had to think about it, and then I realized it was true. I was getting a lot out of it, actually. Made me feel a lot better to think that he was such a bad boy and I was such a good mother. it wasn't the case at all. It never is in a situation like that. It's always us. And that's what this one is about. Identify the pain. Where is the pain? Whose pain is it? And as Jeff said, if you look at it deeply, you can see. And what you see, it's not a thing. It's just another cheap idea. One more unfortunate fault. So that's our instruction. Take responsibility for yourself in every encounter. That's Wallace's bottom line for this one. Take responsibility for ourselves. So can we do a week of that? Should be good. Jeff?
Halloween story?
Oh, please.
Were you at home?
Yes.
So it was damp, and so we didn't get as many kids this year.
Really?
Not a good number. My wife had delegated the responsibility of getting candies this year to me, so I get different things than what she gets. Being a kindergarten teacher, she always gets all these really healthy things for kids.
Oh.
I, on the other hand, went out and bought bags and bags of Skittles and all these chocolates and all these terrible items for children. Anyway, the doorbell rings. I'm about halfway into Halloween when a family, there's like an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and this 3-year-old, and I like to really work it. And so I have this big bowl, and I asked them, I said, "What would you like? Would you like some of the Skittles? Would you like some of the chocolates that has the Reese's? Would you?" Yeah. The kids take it. The girl, the 8-year-old girl, the 6-year-old boy, and then the little guy there. I said, "What would you like?" And he looks at me and goes, "Vanilla?" Just made my evening. It was great. Mm-hmm. that's my Halloween story.
That's very nice.
And I'm sticking to it.
Well, mine is that next door, I live next door to a beekeeper.
Beekeeper?
Who has sort of a vegetable garden in the backyard, and he keeps bees, not only one in his yard, I think, but otherwhere as well,
sure.
In the country. And the across the street neighbors have a new little baby. And so they dressed up, she as a bee, and the little baby as a baby bee. I don't know where they got these costumes, because they were absolutely looking like bees. Mm-hmm. And then the dad as the big farmer kind of guy. It's the funniest costume I ever saw. So I had lots and lots of people of every size and shape, including from other parts of the city. I've come to Willow
Well,
Glen.
You're close to Galarza Elementary there, so.
Yeah.
Well, some of them didn't go home. Until after they had visited you.
I think so.
So, do people on your street decorate and.
Oh,
so
it's just like Christmas.
Like a destination.
It must be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all very jolly. It's all with parents, you know, and everybody, the big kids yelling and feeling their oats, and the little kids in awe, little princesses. You know. Big part of the culture. Every culture, we like to dress up. So we have a half day sit coming up on Saturday, to which all are welcome from 9 to 12. There'll be a short service and a very short talk before we break at noon. So that it came up quickly because November has a very quick Saturday, first Saturday of the month.
It's the second Saturday.
Second Saturday, I mean. It's the 8th.
And I could use help to set up in the morning.
Good.
Oh, thank you.
Dependable. Sale and Bob. Mm.
Do we have a Doan for that?
I can be Doan.
Okay. I can share it with you.
Okay.
If you want. But I won't be there first thing, so.
I will. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to make an announcement that we donated 88 pounds to St. Mark.
That's a lot. Is that
it's
less?
Not as much as we have in the past, but who's keeping score? You know, it can't always be the same. But I thought 88 pounds was pretty good.
That is for a little group.
Yeah.
We had a Seigaki ceremony, a ceremony for the hungry ghosts. And it's a very old Japanese practice of inviting the hungry ghosts and feeding them the Dharma, chanting a Heart Sutra and chanting Gate of Sweet Dew, feeding them all this deliciousness. And then closing the gate again, and then feeding ourselves with a big table groaning with food, And then we have collected at the same time food for our second harvest. So it's a wonderful kind of practice for everyone.